the Boeings and other airplanes that they didn't return or refused to return when the war started. So I believe that they are not in great condition right now in technology and space and flying vehicles at all, to be gentle. Back to you.
Can I ask a question to Wesley? The prejudice that he experienced at the poll.
Who is asking the question?
I don't have a call sign, but...
Sorry. Dr. Roy, let me go to another topic, which some time ago I sent you the email about the SDR with the beamforming and the Russian super sonic Iskander missile. So what was fine when we are changing the subject to from Russian to Russian, the Russian missiles were using part of American technology to build their Iskander rockets, ladies and gentlemen.
Talk about your project.
Okay, so that's a pop. And there are two videos that I have sent you that were talking about it. One was done by the French guy from the channel Let Lavro de Michel. That was turned down of two Russian missile sensors, and it was found that they use FPGA, which is actually which was produced by Altera. Altera doesn't exist any longer, but it was Altera Cyclone FPGA, a family low cost, low power devices designed to high volume cost. Sensitive application, and that was a transceiver that had a humongous amount of power in terms of transmission of the signal. Let me jump. Wesley is okay. And a number of electronics that was from England too. Another one was by the same guy, Javelin missile. A Javelin missile is an interesting device. It is advanced anti-tank weapon system. It was American main portable anti-tank system in service since 1996. That was upgraded. It is a fire and forget design featuring automatic infrared guidance, allowing the user to seek cover immediately after launch. And this is a contrast to the wire guided systems. The wire guided systems were actually developed by Americans in the 50s, even before that. So you had a long wire that was connected to the missile that was targeting the tanks. So now Ukrainians are using those javelins. Actually, in early stage of the war, they started in February 23rd. They were using some of the javelins FGM 148 that were given by United States to them, and they were actually having a lot of success by that. Okay. Now, in the same email I was talking about the amateur beamformers. So we're talking about radar and satellite communication and digital ham radio TV. I'm not going to go more deep into it because we have just a few minutes left for it, but I'm not sure if you were able to view those videos, Dr. Wright.
AC2GS. I saw them about 3 weeks ago. By the way, Altera is the manufacturer for the field programmable gate arrays of my Flex Radio 6700. My ears perked when you mentioned Altera. But I mean, this is the consequence of most warfare, that underdeveloped countries like Russia basically steal technology from more advanced societies. China has been doing it since the beginning of its booming phase, and so Russia does the same. Getting back to beamformers are here and working for people every day. Wi-Fi uses beamforming technology. The problem, as I perceive it, for amateur radio, is beamforming is easiest to implement on microwave, and most hams don't really work too much on microwave. That's why it's part of Wi-Fi 4, 5, 6, and now 7 standards and such. So beamforming is all around us these days. I'm sure that cell towers use beamforming technology as well.
Yeah.
Okay,
so one of the devices costs $99 up to $140 is the transceiver, the SDR, that works up to 56 megahertz, so we're talking about low frequencies. It has a bandwidth of 70 megahertz and 6 gigahertz frequency range, so it could be tuned to different frequencies. There is a number of videos available if you want to publish them on your web site, if you find them interesting. There is a guy, John Kraft, that has been uploading those videos, and he was then followed by a few other guys. One was a woman, Sarah, and she was experimenting with 70 centimeters band and 23 centimeters ham radio band. The device is called Pluto SDR. Pluto SDR. PLUTO SDR. Now, the Pluto SDR for QO100 amateur radio satellite communication is also listed there. And then we have a digital amateur TV, DATV. That is listed by another guy who was responding to that. You have all of the links. I sent them at the beginning of the TechNet. The name of the channel is Corrosive, I believe. So whoever is interested with that. Now, as far as Altera, let me drop.
Comment.
Okay. Altera Corporation doesn't exist any longer. It was based on San Jose, California. That was a semiconductor veterans that were veterans, Rod Smith and Robert Hartmine and James Sunbury. They put $500,000 in the seed money. Seed money, well, that's seed funding, seed capital. It's a form of securities offering. The investor put capital in startup company. But anyhow, they created it in 1984, and then they went good. They acquired PLE for $50 million cash for, I believe, 2000, were 100. For 50 million, right? And then that was the Altera acquired PLD for 50 million, and then they acquired in cash for 200 million another company. So they were doing good, but they bought some technology from Intel, from the directly from the, I'm trying to find out what the company name was, but it was Microsoft. And then, at the end of it, they sold themselves to Microsoft, and that was 2015. So right now, the family of their processors, let me drop. Okay. With the family of their processors, gentlemen, I have antenna directly hitting the antenna of the repeater. My 12 watts would be probably comparable to 5,000 watts of yours if you have one. Have no chances to disturb me. Okay, so, that's all. In December 2015, Altera was sold back to Microsoft for $16.7 billion in cash. So that's the end of the story. So right now, I'm not sure how much of the family of the electronics that is used by you is still available. But we have year 2024, and most of that electronic is right now handled by Intel. Back to you.
AC2GS. Yeah, I think they're still manufactured, or there is a lot of stock. They've discontinued my 6700 because of a parts limitation. They can repair them, but can't do much more. I probably can't manufacture significant numbers. But the rest of the 6000 series that I believe still uses Altera chips is still in production. Sometimes there's delays and such. So I think the Altera chips themselves are still being fabricated. And if not, then I guess they'll shift to another field programmable gate array technology. It's very useful in software-defined radios because you can adjust it so that it's more efficiently capable of doing the digit manipulations required for software-defined radio that isn't as efficient when using a standard Intel CPU or such. I just want to, Ron, W2LBQ tried to break in a couple of times. Ron, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, thank you, Roy. Just quickly, it's very hard to get in between the conversation between you two guys. Anyway, I just wanted to say, and let me make sure I got it, I just wanted to say that 10 years ago, China was working on satellite binding technology. If Russia has it, if China has it, if Russia has it, I'm sure we have it. It's not something that's unique to any one country. I'm sure we're working on it also. Anyway, I don't want to interrupt your highly technical discussion any further. Let me turn it back to you, Roy.
Okay, Ron. Yeah, I agree with you. It's just as some people used to tell me, it's above our pay grade to know these things. But I'm sure the Skunk Works and other agencies, there's Lincoln Labs and MIT. They do a lot of curious, mysterious things. So, and I think we got smarter guys than they have at this point. Some of them come from those countries. So we kind of brain drain them. So thank you, Ron. I appreciate it. Wesley, we're kind of getting kind of late in the night. You want to kind of have some finishing statements to make?
Okay, so just a few words. Tutera was experimenting with 40 nanometers technology, so 1 millimeter, then 1 micrometer, then 1 nanometer. So 40 nanometers technology, and then 28 nanometers technology, where they put 1 million element into the chip, and then 14 nanometers technology. That's why they were able to sell themselves. We have just a few minutes left. interesting in that email that I sent you is the experiment that was shown on the video, where we had a transceiver with one antenna and two antennas for the receiver, and it was tracking by an impulse. So a single impulse was used to set the tracking of the satellite or tracking of an antenna. So you have a situation, let's say, that we have an object on the road to be tracked. We could do it, of course, if we have a source that is transmitting on it. And I was actually very much impressed with that. How that would be done, it was by a phase shift, by the means of the phase shift that allows the antenna, let's say, to track the satellite or track the vehicles or whatever device we have. Thank you very much. I appreciate the time given to me, and back to you, Dr. Roy.
AC2GS. Let's see if we can get this to clear up. That's nice. Thank you. Anyway, AC2GS, thank you, Wesley. Thank you, everyone who participated tonight. This has been a fascinatingly different technical net. I'll have to kind of ponder all this. So thank you, everyone. And now it's time for the SpaceNet Report with Paul WS2N.
AC2GSWS2N, very good. And, I don't know what the big deal is. If we wanted to go after some satellites, it would probably take 10 minutes before, from launch to where we got to go to find a satellite. I'm sure the rest of the countries could do that as well. They're going to put a nuke in space and light it off and have an EMT. What are they going to do, take out a half a dozen satellites at one time? None of it makes any sense, so chances of Putin talking about the truth about this is, my guess, is probably around zero, or half truth anyway. In the launches and landing category, before I go, Odessa's the landing of the moon, there is a launch coming up in April on a Atlas V rocket, which is going to be a crew launch. It'll be a launch of the Starliner being built by Boeing and being launched by Boeing and Lockheed on the Atlas V rocket. You'll have two solid boosters attached to it. It'll have two RL-10 liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen. Second stage that will propel the Starliner crewed spacecraft to the International Space Station. You might remember that thing has been launched two times before. First time it had all kinds of problems and never made it to the space station. They had to bring it back. It landed successfully in New Mexico, near White Sands, New Mexico. And then they launched again. They straightened out their problems, computer problems, a few other things. Again, without a crew, just, the first test mission has to be successful and dock with the International Space Station. SpaceX did that many years ago with the Dragon spacecraft. Well, Starliner did the same. It docked with the space station, a year or two, about a year and a half ago. And they had people inside the space station go inside the spacecraft when it was hatched. People actually have gone into that spacecraft when it's been in orbit. And everything was pretty much successful. They brought that back to White Sands, New Mexico again, unmanned. But this time they're going to go up with two people. They did have some problems with the tape inside the spacecraft that was protecting all the wires and harnesses, and they decided that that could be flammable. So they spent months taking out all the old stuff, putting in the new stuff, and they had some problems with the links, for the parachutes. Parachutes are designed, you know, you have three parachutes come out when they return, but just in case one fails, they have two. And when they tested with two, they noticed there were some problems with some of the links. So they beat them up, and they straightened all that out, and had it good to go in April. I guess probably mid to late April. For Barry Wilmore and Sonny Williams to go up to the space station for a couple of weeks, that's all. Because it still is a test flight. And they've been working with Boeing for quite a few years, many years. Especially Sonny Williams, she started out with them right from the beginning. She's been up to they've both been up to the space station before. But hopefully this thing will lift off in April. We'll be able to cover the launch of the first Starliner to the space station. And if that goes well, then it will go into regular rotation with the Dragon. Dragon will go up. Crew will stay for 6 months. The Dragon will return. And as that happens, Starliner will go up with their crew. And again, with four. Each time they go up, they'll have four people in each spacecraft. So that's why we have a constant crew of seven. You have always four from the American side and three from the Russian side. And before I go on, let me drop it, see if anybody has any comments about Starliner. This is WS2M.
Kilo Echo 2 Alpha Juliet Uniform. Paul, I'm listening to you. I'm Charlie.
Good evening, Charlie. Nice to hear from you again. And we'll be here a little while longer. So thanks for being there. Okay, Odysseus is the name of the vehicle that just went to the moon. It landed a couple days ago, Friday, and Thursday? Thursday afternoon. And this thing was launched a week before that, and it was launched on a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket from Florida, from Launch Complex 39A, where they had the capability in that launch facility to fill the Odysseus spacecraft with liquid methane and liquid oxygen. It's the first time any spacecraft has gone to any deep space anywhere with liquid methane and liquid oxygen. They usually use the hypergolic fuels, two different fuels that mix, and they ignite. Companies are trying to get away from that. You know, that's what they use for Apollo. Work great. It's great. You don't need an ignition source. You know, everybody is eventually switching to liquid methane, liquid oxygen. Theory, of course, if you go to the moon or if you go to Mars, you'd be able to make methane and oxygen and be able to live off the land. So, anyway, this thing launched. They called it the Nova C spacecraft. Nova meaning new, a new type of design. And C, well, from the Roman numeral C, it should carry 100 pounds or so, minimum of payload, and that's where they get that name from. So Nova C separated successfully from the upper stage of Falcon 9 and headed to the moon. And eventually went into orbit a few days later, and again they fired this liquid methane, liquid oxygen engine quite a few times, a couple of big course corrections, and then they needed to slow down to get into the orbit of the moon, and that all worked just fine. So the engine worked great. It's a 900-pound thrust engine that they developed for three fractions. So that worked well. So now Odysseus is in orbit around the moon, And then the next goal is to head down to the... it is a lander. It has six legs on it. The legs were permanently in the open position because, you know, they had plenty of room inside the fairing of the Falcon 9 rocket to be able to do that. So it was designed to have legs that don't fold up. You remember on the limbs that went to the moon, they had to be folded up inside the Apollo Saturn vehicle. So, now, of course, this is nowhere near as big as a limb. A limb was over 30,000 pounds. You know, the footprint from one leg on a limb landed to the other was, you know, probably around 30. I think it's around 35 feet or so. And of course, this thing is still pretty large, though. You know, that's here, stood about 12 feet high and about maybe 5-6 feet in diameter. It was a hexagonal shape. It had six sides and has two main solar panels vertically mounted to the side, one on one side, one on the other, and another one on the very top. So they thought that we'd have enough power to be able to power this thing for the time that it's going to be on the moon. So now, like I said before, they had it in orbit around the moon, and they noticed that the orbit was a little high to start with. You know, they usually fly around 60 miles above, and then they eventually lower that to 10 miles, and then at that 10-mile altitude, that's when they usually would start the final descent. But, you know, they were up pretty high, say 50, 60 miles, and they noticed that they were a little too high. So let's lower the spacecraft a little bit. So they turn on the laser system that they call it LIDAR. Instead of radar, it's LIDAR. They're using laser light and infrared. To go back to the beginning of that, they are infrared. And as they turn that on, they realize they're not coming on. Now they need this for the last 5 minutes of flight. When they do land, they notice it was not operating. And by the way, to make a long story short, the reason it wasn't operating, I found out later, is that, you know, you talk about infrared laser could, you know, damage somebody's eyes. You know, they have these lasers mounted on the spacecraft. There was a limit switch switch that somebody had shut off to make sure that the lasers, when they're working on it, don't come on and accidentally blind somebody. So that was left in the off position. When they go through all the procedures before launch, sure enough, that switch was never reversed. So now they have a system, perfectly operating vehicle, that won't be able to land properly. So what did they do? They talked to NASA. They got the bright idea to use one of the systems that experiments that NASA had on board. Had six different experiments on board this spacecraft. It was a total of 12. You know, the other six are commercial things, but NASA had six, and one of them was a laser system. Again, an infrared laser system that NASA wanted to test. They wanted to test independent of what the company Intuitive Machines was doing that made this whole thing. What happened is NASA wants to use that information for further landings, especially manned landings in the future. So they got the idea to run a software patch to replace the operating NASA infrared laser system with one that wasn't working. And it did work. They were able to download that information. It cost them an extra orbit around the moon. Every time you go around the moon, it's around 90 minutes, almost 2 hours for each orbit. WS-1. So what happened was they said, okay, let's do it, and they did it, and they started to de-orbit, and they got down to the 10-mile area, and then from there they decided to go down and land and try to land at Malapert A crater. So everything worked fine. This engine came on, this liquid methane, liquid oxygen engine. First time any methane engine is going to be used to land on any planet or any moon. And that slowed the spacecraft down enough. They got down near the moon surface. They would come down, they said, around 6 miles per hour, and moving forward around 2 miles per hour. Moving forward it's really about 1.5 feet per second. And that forward motion, one of the legs, they believe, caught on a, and because it still had some forward motion, they believe it topped over, and sure enough, that's what happened. It wound up laying down on its side, and you know, from the telemetry, they could tell that's what happened. The goal is to take whatever information is on board Odysseus and send it down to Earth, including pictures, including, you know, they plan on launching a camera off the side of this thing. It's going to land about 100 feet away, and that camera is going to take a picture of the location of where this thing is sitting on the moon. A lot of stuff that needs to be downloaded. And apparently they're having a problem. They had a news conference on Friday afternoon. If anybody saw it, they pretty much told you what I tell you tonight, except I have a little bit more information. What happened is the ability to transmit signals continuously down to Earth is being hampered. Because it's playing on its side, Odysseus has two antennas for transmitting to Earth. And, you know, one is kind of like facing down. The other one is on the other side, kind of facing down. And, you know, it's transmitting, and they're getting weak signals. And with a weak signal, it's tough to get, you know, a constant throughput with what they really need, especially what's going on. The program for Odysseus was, let's say, it was supposed to land upright. And if it was turned a certain way, by the way, these antennas don't have any AS-L motors on board. They're permanently mounted. So they thought it would land up straight and maybe it would be, you know, a little off one way or another. So they just to switch from one antenna to the other. And this way, you know, until they had a solid lock. But what's happening now is because this thing's laying on its side, both antennas are really not communicating well. Odysseus is switching back and forth from one antenna to the other antenna, back and forth, and they're not getting constant throughput. So they claim they're going to have pictures, or should have had pictures by the weekend. I thought I was going to be able to at least have one picture to be able to put on Dr. Roy's website tonight, but that's not to be.
Paul, got a question.
I checked during the net as you guys were speaking. I thought, well, maybe they put it out, and I'll still be able to do that. So hopefully by next week we'll be able to do it. This thing will not operate on the moon forever. They predict a 9-day operation. You know, seven and a half days operation in the daylight, and then they'll wind up on battery power for another day or so. So the most they're going to get is a 9-day operation. They don't have a radioisotope thermoelectric generator on board to keep it warm, and where it would make it through the lunar night, which is of course 14 days. They don't have that. They don't have enough battery power to keep the electronics warm. But we'll see.
Paul,
going
back
question. Years ago, before the Apollo mission, NASA landed the Surveyor missions on the moon, and they successfully landed 5 different ones all over everywhere. And, I know one of them, at least one of them, maybe two, made it through the lunar night. Surveyor 1 made it through 2 lunar nights in a row. And Surveyor 3 didn't. Well, Survey 3 had other problems when it landed. That's the one that came down, and the they had radar for landing. They didn't have a LIDAR system with a laser, but as that came down, they got a false reading, and the engine didn't shut off when it was supposed to, and it kept going down toward the surface, hit the surface, bounced up about 30, 40 feet, and then came back down again, hit it again, bounced up again, and then permanently landed. That had three legs. This thing has six legs. And that did a fine job. It landed and did its work. It had a robotic arm on it. Dug some holes. So, on the news, they always say, how come we did all this stuff over 50 years ago. Why can't we do it now? Well, one of the reasons is money. The Surveyor program alone, just for those five landers, by the way, this morning was really Surveyor number two and Surveyor number four never made it. But anyway, the Surveyor program was over $5 billion. And, and this thing is, they said around $120 million that this company poured into this. But we'll see. I hope they get pictures out of it. They consider it a success. So I get the pictures back, and I'll consider it a partial success. Intuitive Machines, the builder of this Nova C spacecraft, has plans on launching a couple more, one by the end of the year, then another one by the beginning of next year. There's another company involved, this Astrobiotic from Pittsburgh. They're the ones building the Peregrine machine that did not make it to the moon about a month or so ago, and that burnt up in the atmosphere of Earth. They have another planned mission with a different design, a completely different design. So they have a couple of missions planned in the near future. So this is going to become a real thing, hopefully, as time goes on. They also have long-term plans of they're not just going to go two or three of these missions. If all goes well over time, these are sort of like little trucks that are going to be going to the moon on a regular basis. So you can imagine a crew on board them, staying for extended periods of time on the moon, and they need supplies, they need everything from test equipment to tools and even food and clothes and who knows what else, oxygen. These truck type of delivery systems is what these two companies are trying to develop. So it's a different deal from years ago when we were worried about beating the Russians. Get there, put a flag in, and that was it. This time they plan on going and staying. Any comments, questions? Going on and on here. This is WS2N. Let me drop it.
Paul, got a question.
Is that Charlie?
Yes, got a question. Can they take that module that tipped over on its side and stand it up somehow?
No, they can't. And, maybe if they had stronger reaction control systems, RCS, you might think they would be able to do that, But they don't have that, and even if they did, I'm sure that wouldn't work. They have very weak reaction control systems. They don't
use... Is there much damage to the module?
Or fuel on this vehicle. To change their attitude when they're out in space, and they need to rotate the spacecraft in the proper direction before they fire the main engine. They use nitrogen jets. That's all it is. This one was using... They were using helium. They had a helium tank on board. They were using helium for their reactor. But, you just give it a little blast one way or another, and the vehicle would move. you know, and which works fine. I mean, that goes back to the Ed White days, when Ed White was the first American to do a spacewalk. I remember he went out there not with a helium gun, but it was nitrogen in the gun. He was able to bring with that. That works good. But yeah, they can't stand it up. But hopefully, you know, they have this camera on board, this Eagle camera that was supposed to pop out around 100 feet above the surface. And as it did, it was going to take pictures of the lander as it came in for a landing and dropped it. But because of what went on with the switch of this laser system, that disconnected their ability for Eagle Cam to function at that time. But now it's still, you know, now it's still able to function. So they're thinking about it. They know which way this thing to turn, and the Eagle Cam happens to be pushing them, you know, in the right direction. They'll release that. My guess is probably, you know, generated. Maybe they got a nitrogen thrust in there, a big spring. I'm not sure how they launch this thing out of the side of it. But, you know, hopefully that works. And then they could transmit that signal back to the lander and turn the lander to transmit the signals back to Earth. Now, this company's using their own receiving antennas on Earth that they set up around the Earth instead of using the Deep Space Network. I haven't heard the suggestion. I mean, one of the first things that crossed my mind is, why don't they call up NASA again? They did them a favor last time by working on the lasers. Why don't they call them up and say, you know, let us borrow one of your big, you know, 120-foot dishes that you use for the Deep Space Network. You know, the Deep Space Network they have situated every 120 degrees around the Earth. So they have Goldstone, California, they have Madrid, Spain, and they have Canberra in Australia. So let them borrow that system, you know, and get, you know, I know it's a weak signal coming off it. Use that, you know, it's coming in on the S-band, of course, which is around 2-point-something gigahertz. So, you know, they have that capability to do that. They got to get it done. They better get a couple of pictures down. That's all I can say. But for the sake of that group that did this, they could really call it a success if they get something back. Anything else, Charlie?
Yes. Is there any damage to the module?
From what I understand, is they believe no. You know, it just tipped over lightly and. And, you know, it's just a 12-foot thing. Yeah, sure, it weighs probably 1,000 pounds on Earth, but, you know, it's 1/6 the gravity up there, so it's not a heavy thing when it tipped over. They also think that it landed on a rock, so that, you know, the legs are still, you know, protruding. So that means if it is laying on a rock, that means this whole 12-foot long spacecraft is laying horizontally and not like angled down to the surface. But time will tell if they could ever get a picture of this thing. Back to you, Charlie.
No other questions. I'm going to be listening here for the rest of the night.
Okay, very good. We don't have much more time ticks away on me here. There's a company called BARDA, B-A-R-D-A, Space, and they developed, their goal is to develop manufacturing in space. They want to manufacture crystals, they want to manufacture drugs, and whatever, and they launched a spacecraft back in June, and, you know, 6 months ago, and it was supposed to do this stuff for about a month, and then whatever they're trying to manufacture in space, supposed to come back there in a month or so, and it was going to come back on in this descent vehicle, you know, with the ability to go through the atmosphere, you know, with the heat shield, parachutes, and everything. And they had planned on landing in the Utah, you know, the Army Utah proving ground. out in the middle of nowhere in Utah. And they had launched this thing, and then they told the government what they wanted to do. The government said, what's this? You never told us. You never cleared this with us. So this thing's been flying around for 6 months in space. And they finally got an okay. The feds finally allowed this. And sure enough, the thing came screaming through the atmosphere, 17,500 miles an hour, floated all the way down the heat shield parachute, and landed in the Utah desert. And I'm sure they're going to be very happy to get their 3-foot diameter experimental spacecraft back with whatever they were doing on the inside, trying to manufacture
that
something.
That time complete.
But it turns out that because of the problems they had arranging a landing in Utah, they made arrangements with Australia to launch out in the middle of nowhere, but somewhere in Australia, and be able to return their capsules out there. Now, a lot of the data that came off of this landing, Rocket Lab, which is a company that develops the Electron rocket, they've flown almost 50 flights now with the Electron rocket. They have Electron Rocket Lab has the goal of building the Neutron rocket, which is going to be mid-size launcher, and they're developing that in Virginia. And they plan on launching out of Wallops Island, Virginia, within a year or so. But they have long-term plans of this thing being completely reusable. I mean, first stage, second stage, and then coming through the atmosphere. So they're doing studies with this SPARTA, taking the information and using that. Because they have longer-term goals. If Neutron is ever developed, which I think it will be eventually, of becoming a human flight vehicle. So that, I mean, that's a possibility in the future. So, a lot going on, a lot of cooperation between different companies. Of course, different cooperation going on with NASA and everything. It's pretty amazing. Let me drop it. Yeah, okay. And
didn't they have another flight today?
People making progress.
Didn't they send up another rocket this morning?
The guy who owns Amazon also owns the rocket company Blue Origin, and he's the one that's built the New Shepard suborbital flight rocket that has taken people on rides for 3-4 minutes of weightlessness and then returned to Earth in western Texas. That's been successful. But all these years, they've been building the New Glenn rocket, which is a heavy lifting vehicle. I mean, this thing is not as big, but getting close to the size of the Saturn V rocket that took people to the moon. So it's a big rocket, and they finally brought one of these rockets to their launch pad. They spent billions of dollars on rebuilding the Launch Complex 36 in Florida that they're going to launch New Glenn out of. And sure enough, they had a picture of Jeff Bezos there with another guy standing there looking at this thing. They had put the New Glenn on the Launch Complex, standing up. And they want to, well, what they're going to do is they're going to put fluids into it, test things out, and then eventually bring it back to the building. And then they say definitely this year that they're going to launch. They'll bring it back, and this time they'll have their 7 engines in the vehicle. We'll see if we can get another company to get involved with this. NASA has faith in Blue Origin. They plan on putting one of their spacecraft on board. Second.
Paul, got a question.
I put my fan on you. Just ripped my radio's starting to cook. Anyway, was just saying, oh yeah, NASA plans on putting one of their spacecraft on board. It's called the, they call it ESCAPADE, which stands for Escape and Plasma Acceleration and Dynamics Explorer. Anyway, it's a Mars mission. So, the very, very first New Glenn that eventually goes up will actually be carrying a, you know, an unmanned, of course, unmanned vehicle to Mars. I believe that it contains two spacecraft in the escapade mission. They have two vehicles that will be going in orbit around around Mars. I believe it's also going to take some close-up pictures of one or two of their moons. We'll see. I'm just glad to see New Glenn being developed. A lot of people working for them. He's now got as many people working for them as SpaceX has for them. So there's a big push to get that in the air. All right, any last comments before I turn it back to Roy? This is WS2N.
Yes, I got one question. Can I listen to the space transmissions to the satellite? I mean, to the... Oh, can I listen to the astronauts?
Well, they're up there, the frequencies that they use now, you can't hear them like in the old days, you know. I guess everything's encrypted. You know, I listen to, you know, the NASA transmissions, but they don't have all their transmissions on 24 hours a day, that's for sure. They're only scheduled. But, you know what's interesting? That Nova C spacecraft that landed on the moon, I heard this one guy, he was saying that amateurs were able to hear the signal, or copy the signal, and the amateurs also were confirming that it was weak. So, I don't know. I'm going to listen to the amateur radio news line tomorrow night and see if somebody says something about that. That would be interesting to find out if somebody was able to copy that. It was an S-band transmission. Ongoing, I'm sure on a continuous basis. The company's desperately trying to get pictures and a lot of other information back from the spacecraft. Let me turn it back to Roy. And this has been Paul, WS2N, for the SpaceNet Report for the TechNet. And we'll be back hopefully next week. And definitely on tomorrow night. We have a Club InfoNet that's on these repeaters at 8:30, followed by George, who does the KD2FIU. He does the swap and shop that, and that's followed by what I was talking about before, Amateur Radio Newsline. Back over to you, Roy, AC2GS, WS2N.
AC2GS here. Thank you, Paul. Thank you for the SpaceNet report. Thank you for all that you do on the technical net. Thank you for all that you do for the club. We all appreciate it, and I especially appreciate it. And I appreciate everyone who participated tonight. It was a lively, albeit kind of anarchic episode of the Limark Technical Net that will go down in the history books. As always, our rebels now are done. I always like to remind people, Dick, K2RIW, ended his technical nets with good advice. Be kind to each other. Please, the world is complicated without arguments and little nitpicking and other such. So please be kind to each other. And as good old Epictetus once said, it's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. So keep an open mind and learn something new every day. If you don't use your brain, you'll lose your brain. So please be safe, be well, and come back next Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we'll try and do this all over again. This is AC2GS formally ending this particular episode of the Limark Technical Net, and I'll be going clear after I say the usual two words. Slava Ukraine.
W2VL repeater. Tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Limark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
51T. Papa Delta.